ambition, rigor, and academic excellence. Those are just some of the promises of the best public high schools here in New York City. And this week, some students got big news about whether they would become part of the next group of elite graduates of the class of 2023. There are 8 specialized high schools in New York City that focus on the arts, math, and science. These elite public schools offer students a spot based on how well they do on a single standardized test. It's incredibly competitive, and historically, admission has been skewed when it comes to race. The same is true this year. Even though 70% of students in New York City are Black and Latino, only about 10% of students admitted to elite specialized high schools are Black and Latino. Stuyvesant High School, the most coveted, admitted 7 Black students out of 895 offers for incoming freshmen. And that's less than 1%. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. In just a minute, we'll look at the inequities in elite public schools across the country. But first, let's take a look at what's happening here in New York. Binash Ahmed is a producer here at The Takeaway, and she's been covering this for WNYC. Welcome to the show, Binash.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about the test itself. I'm a student. I'm in junior high school in New York City. At what point do I know that I have to take this test or that I should take this test?
So that's a big question. A lot of students find out about this test years prior. Maybe they have siblings. Maybe it's a popular thing in their community where they've seen people go through these specialized high schools and really come home with a lot of success, go on to Ivy League schools. And then some students, largely the Black and Latino community, who make up a majority of students in this city, about 70%, don't hear about it as frequently. And for those students, it can be a challenge to really catch up, because what it takes to ace this test is focused study, right? There are test prep programs. They take it in eighth grade, and it doesn't necessarily cover items that they would see just sitting in the classroom normally.
So last year, you interviewed a bunch of students who were getting ready to take the test. One of the students you interviewed is Derek Zhang. Let's take a listen to what Derek had to say.
You see, like, everybody else, how, like, they're spending their time. They're, like, all having fun right now. But I know that in a few months, some of them aren't going to be as happy as they are now. So that's, like, kind of a motivation.
What's Derek telling us there?
So in that cut, you really hear what it takes to take this test. Derek is one of many students I spoke to who essentially cleared their lives to prepare for this test. They dropped extracurriculars. They dropped theater and band. And when I met him, it was in the fall of last year, right before he took the test. He was in his living room, just surrounded by workbooks. So he is one of those students who has done all of the work to get in.
Did he get in?
Well, he got into a specialized high school, but he didn't get into the one he wanted to go to. He was dreaming of a spot at the top specialized high school, Stuyvesant, but he didn't do as well as he liked on the test. And that's made him kind of question this test a little bit.
Now, you mentioned a statistic earlier, 70% of students in New York City are Black and Latino. Only 10% of students admitted to these elite specialized high schools are Black and Latino. I was one of those kids many, many years ago. The top school, Stuyvesant, is the one that's been getting the headlines, has admitted 7 Black students out of 895 offers. What can you tell us, Binash, that helps us explain this massive racial disparity?
Yeah, so part of it comes from looking at students like Derek and what they did to prepare and how much their parents and the institutions around them, their communities, have really made sure that they have what it takes to take this test. Now, the other side of the equation is the Black and Latino community, who may not even hear about this test. I was surprised by how little information trickles through to those communities. Last summer, I went to a high school admissions fair in the Bronx, which, of course, is majority Black and Latino, and I found that I talked to several parents, and no one of them had even heard of the test before. All of them were excited of having their kids take the test, but they would be competing at that point with students who had spent years preparing when they would have only months. That's something I talked to former New York City Deputy Mayor Richard Bury about. So he's a Stuyvesant alum. He was one of a few Black students who were admitted there. He's now the Chief of Policy and Public Affairs at KIPP, which is a charter school network. When I spoke to Richard Bury, he told me that it is absurd to call the system a meritocracy when it only admits so few Black students, that there is something fundamentally wrong with the system, in his view, if that is the outcome. Because he said there's no way that he can believe that there are so few Black and Latino students who are capable of doing well at the school. And so it's the system that's at fault, not these students.
There's also something for the Black and brown students who do get into these schools, the feeling of something known as imposter syndrome. What did he tell you about that?
So one thing I want to say up top is that Richard Beery went to Stuyvesant High School when there were about 200 Black students there. There's about 1/4 as many who will be in that school starting next year. So what he felt in terms of imposter syndrome, you can say, is, you know, going to only be magnified when there are even fewer students.
There's a constant sense of questioning of one's belonging. Why am I the only Black person here, and am I good enough to be there? You spend so much time second-guessing yourself of, do I belong here? It makes it all the harder to sort of sit and focus and to persist in school.
And I think that is that's something that I've heard not only from Richard Beery, but I spoke to alumni from Stuyvesant through the ages, so from the 70s, the 80s, 90s, and onward. And I found that for Black students at this school, the fewer other Black students there were, the harder a time they had, because a lot of them are coming from majority Black middle schools, from majority Black communities. And then to be one of only a few, they felt like they were a fish out of water and felt that their academics suffered because of that, because they weren't supported and they didn't have, you know, the community that they needed. There's also been documented incidents of racism at some of these schools. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword, because someone like Richard Beery will say that school opened doors for him. He went from there to Harvard, on to Yale. He has had a successful career, was former deputy mayor of the city. And yet he says he carried that imposter syndrome that was sort of planted in him as a high school student onward with him throughout his, you know, laudable career.
Beenish Ahmed is a Takeaway producer and former WNYC education reporter. Beenish, thanks so much for your reporting.
Thank you.
New York isn't the only city trying to figure out the right approach to prioritizing academic achievement and equity. There are approximately 165 so-called exam schools across the country that are dealing with these same issues. Aaliyah Wong is a staff writer at The Atlantic covering education and families. Thanks for joining us, Aaliyah.
Thank you.
So let's start with, where did this idea, because remember, we're talking about public schools here. So where did the idea of this selective admissions public schools come from?
Right. So it's kind of hard to suss out exactly what the origin story is. A lot of the schools that currently are selective have existed for centuries. But the model that we're talking about with places like Stuyvesant largely traces back to the Brown v. Board era, a time when we were seeing a lot of white flight, a lot of affluent families moving out of the public school system into private schools. And these institutions were in part a way to kind of attract them back into the public school system, to kind of introduce balance back into classrooms. Obviously, that's not necessarily the reality today, but I think they were well-intended and at least for a time may have served that purpose.
We talked just earlier about the racial disparities in these schools here in New York. I am a graduate of one of these schools, but I can tell you that, you know, with the Stuyvesant numbers today specifically, you know, less than 1% of those admitted are Black. And so is the data on demographics across the country similar?
I don't think they're nearly as egregious as in New York City. I think these schools, by virtue of the fact that they're academically selective, do tend to disproportionately enroll white students, Asian students, higher income students. Chicago's an interesting example. It's another city that has a pretty robust network of these schools. And a little under a decade ago, they created this algorithm to sort of at least ameliorate some of the discrepancies in socioeconomic status that we were seeing in the schools. So it basically called students from various socioeconomic tiers and guaranteed at least a few spots for students who might not otherwise even have a chance at these schools. But even in Chicago, while we did see improved socioeconomic diversity, they do still have higher numbers of white students than their regular counterparts. They do tend to enroll more wealthy students. So it's kind of hard to create a perfect system with this model.
What strikes me about this, Aaliyah, is also that these are, again, just reiterating, these are public schools. And in theory, I think you mentioned a little bit of the history here, but the big question I have is, why are all of our public schools not offering this quality of education?
I wish I knew the answer. I wonder that myself. When I first started reporting on these schools, it was out of just incredulity. I couldn't really figure out why there was a justification for them. I think, you know, that's really the irony of these schools because of the really founding mission of public education in this country, of public schools, is that they're meant to negate different destinies, that they're meant to kind of be engines of mobility, of really embodying the country's identity as a meritocracy. And it seems in a way that these schools are doing the exact opposite.
And what about the admissions and funding for a lot of these schools, Aaliyah? Like here in New York, we've got one test or one audition, you ace it or you don't. Does the same hold true for other states around the country?
As far as I know, and researchers seem to agree, that there isn't another city where this kind of exclusive focus on a very high-stakes exam is the only admissions criterion. There are usually array of factors that determine a student's admission. It looks a lot more like college admissions, at least at more selective schools, where you look at a variety of factors, arguably more subjective factors like their context and their personality, but it's quite an anomaly to just look at the test score, not even grades.
I want to ask you, here in New York City, there was a lot of political pushback to any changes to the test. Are you seeing that across the country? Are there folks who are wanting to really reinvigorate or change the system to make it more equitable?
I think there's generally a recognition that these systems aren't fair, but I don't think anywhere is as egregious as New York City that there is this real drive to overhaul the system.
Aaliyah Wong is a staff writer at The Atlantic covering education and families. Aaliyah, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
This is August in Portland, Oregon. When I was young, my mother worked to get me points for magnet programs in the LAUSD system. It's how I got into a gifted magnet in middle school and a humanities magnet in high school. The whole thing is still a mystery to me. It seems arbitrary and unfair. I am incredibly privileged to have a mother who could spend time and energy playing the system.
My name is Leanne. I'm calling from Olympia, Washington. My daughter attended an alternative public high school here in this area. It offered students a lot of independence. They required an application in order to get into the program. That included an essay and an interview. To my knowledge, all applicants who have completed all those steps are admitted. I'm not sure how well that works for kids that have no help to apply or to get transportation. This school offers no transportation, so I had to figure out how to get my daughter there and back from our rural home 10 miles out.
Join the conversation on The Takeaway's Facebook page or send us a tweet at The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.